Welcome to iHeartRadio Communities, a public affairs special focusing on the biggest issues impacting you this week. Here's Ryan Gorman.
Thanks for joining us here on iHeartRadio Communities. I'm Ryan Gorman, and for this episode, we're going to spend the next half hour looking back at the tragic events that unfolded 19 years ago on September 11th, 2001. Last week, we focused on 9/11 Day, the federally recognized September 11th National Day of Service and Remembrance. It's a day meant to dedicate time to helping others in the spirit of service, unity, and peace, in a tribute to the victims of 9/11 and terrorism worldwide, along with first responders and others who have risen in service to defend freedom. I was joined by the founders of 9/11 Day to share their personal experiences and to talk about the mission they've been on over the past 19 years. If you'd like to hear that discussion, you can find the podcast version of that show on your iHeartRadio app. Just search for iHeartRadio Communities. You can also find out more about the organization and the tremendous work they're doing at 911day.org. Again, 911day.org. For this show, I'm going to turn things over to my iHeartRadio colleague, Shelley Sunstein, for a cause that's been close to her heart for many years. 9/11 first responders risked their lives and their health in order to help others on that fateful day and long after, as the cleanup was underway. I'm sure you've heard the stories by now of those American heroes falling ill and many dying because of the toxins they inhaled during that time. Sadly, it's been a fight to make sure those first responders received the health care they so deserve, and Shelley has been on the front lines of that battle. She'll talk to an FDNY commissioner, and she'll highlight the Tunnels to Towers Foundation. Here's Shelley.
It's all about, as Spike Lee put it, doing the right thing. It was around 13 years ago when I got active in the 9/11 community, when it became painfully obvious to me that thousands of 9/11 first responders and others in the community were falling ill from the toxic dust. 1 week after 9/11, the EPA declared the air was safe, so everyone went back to work, to school, their homes, their lives, all breathing in dust that would ultimately be linked to 68 cancers. It was so shocking to me that we would turn our backs on hero first responders and not provide for their health care. What does that say to all first responders? What does that say to future first responders? So I made it my mission to make sure that we as a nation did the right thing. And ultimately we did, with the passage of the Zadroga Act, providing 9/11 illness survivors with free lifetime health care, also providing compensation for their pain and suffering. Friday is the 19th anniversary of the September 11th attacks that killed close to 3,000 in New York City, Washington, D.C., and Shanksville, PA. At least 2,000 more have since died of 9/11 illnesses. 9/11 didn't end on 9/11. This morning, we'll hear the 9/11 story of FDNY Commissioner Daniel Nigro and Frank Siller, President and CEO of the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Daniel Nigro was Chief of Operations with the Fire Department of New York on 9/11.
I'm sitting here in my office, which is on the eighth floor in Brooklyn here in fire headquarters. And it's just one floor above where I was 19 years ago on September 11, 2001. And it faces what was the World Trade Center and is now the new tower and area that was rebuilt. I've always said when talking to people about this, when late summer comes, I think most of us who have a very close experience with 9/11 start to feel edgy. It's an anniversary we don't celebrate. It's an anniversary we observe. You frequently hear the words, never forget. Sometimes we wish we could forget some of the things that happened that day, but that's impossible. I think never forget those we lost. To complete that sentence is better, and that's for sure. Those people deserve to be remembered, not just on each anniversary, but every day for what they did and what they suffered through. So for me, we came into what that morning would be a regular day at the office for us in the fire department, and we just completed the chiefs and Chief Gantzi and I was chief of operation. I was his second in command. Donald Burns and Jerry Barbara and some others, we finished our morning conference and were just about to get down to work when the building shook. We could actually see the smoke coming from the Twin Towers, from the North Tower. And we rushed out of the building to respond. And on the way there, coming over the Brooklyn Bridge, I rode in the car with Pete Gansey. I did say to him, this will be the worst day of our lives, looking up at what happened. And that was after the North Tower was hit and the South Tower was not even yet hit. And it was, in fact, the worst day of our lives and the last day of for almost 3,000 people in New York and Washington and Shanksville. So it was a day like no other for the fire department. We had hundreds of members on the ground in the buildings. Our job was to evacuate whoever was left in the towers, try to get up to the floors that were burning and get safe passage for those folks. We tried very hard, evacuate people out of the hotel. As the South Tower came down, we lost many people there. And not long after the North Tower, that was the first hit, the second to come down, that's when Chief Gansey was killed. It was, at the time, we had no idea how many members we lost, how many people were lost. We knew it would be, I think Mayor Giuliani had said it was some number that was just hard to comprehend before the actual count was made. And it took us a while to gather all that information, and we found out that 343 members of our department were among the close to 3,000 killed. And that was a blow. Previous to that, the department's greatest loss of life was in 1966 on 23rd Street when 12 brave members of the department perished. It was an incomprehensible number of people, friends, close associates. The department had its greatest day on its worst day. You could say that, you know, the nature of what we do is to try to save people, and that's what we did. And in the process of showing the greatness of the department, we suffered our greatest loss. And it was a loss that that afternoon, when the realization came to me that I would be the chief, because Chief Gansey had died when the North Tower came down, I really had no idea how we would respond to it, how we would come back as a department, how we would be able to function. But I underestimated probably the greatness of the department, because we did. We never stopped working on that, at that site, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, until the very end of May 2002, when we got down to the bottom of that, what was left of that 17-acre site, and could do no more, searching for those we lost, and we, in a dignified manner, left the site. It was, of course, you know, the worst day I could have ever had, any member in this department had. The sorrow that lingered around the department still exists. There's fewer and fewer members of the department around that were around then. We're taking in members now who have no recollection of 9/11. They were too young. And you think about it, you know, no one in school today, if you're in high school, college, you would be either not born or be too young to really remember what happened on that day. So it is important that we who do remember tell our stories to those who can't, who don't, because our stories are really the stories of the heroes that entered the building. Many of them, especially our more experienced members, knew that there was a possibility that they would not come out alive. And yet, no one, you know, refused to do their job that day, people actually came down there who were off duty, responded down there to help who weren't even responsible to be there. So they went above and beyond on the morning of 9/11. So it is, it's a tough time of year for us, for those of us who have survived it. We'll have a ceremony here at headquarters for the headquarters personnel that we lost that day. We have a ceremony a few days before 9/11 for the, we're adding 27 more names to our wall for people who died subsequent to 9/11 from the diseases of working there. To date, the department has lost 226 members post 9/11, on top of the 343 we lost that very morning. The department continues to suffer. The members of the department and their families continue to suffer because of this attack. You know, while I think we've all had good days in over the past 19 years, we've had marriages of children and births of grandchildren and happy times, there is always the, in the background in our lives, is the sadness of 9/11. It just becomes part of your life. So at this time of year, we'll get through it. We'll get through it proudly and strongly. Next year, of course, will be the 20th anniversary. Not that 1 year makes a difference, but of course, there are certain milestones that are recognized a little bit more. So I think hopefully we'll be out of the pandemic by then and the department can do things as we formerly did. This year, some of our observations of the holiday, of the event, will be somewhat subdued because of needing to social distance, etc.
That day, so many wives of FDNYers tell me the frustration of not knowing if their husband or their wife was safe or not. Were you able to let your family know that you were okay, or were they in that same situation, not knowing if you were still with us or not?
It took a while to, our cell phone service was, those of us who had cell phones, was very sketchy for some period. After the towers came down, the cell phones were not working. I was able to have someone make a call for me from a landline at some point after the towers came down and get a message to my wife who was working at the time. So she had a some amount of time where she didn't know where I was, you know, knew I'd be there, but was uncertain. And there was only of those who perished initially, we didn't find too many. So there was really for quite a long period, people wondering, they hadn't heard from their loved one. Could they be in a hospital? Could they, it was very disturbing time for us, for the family. Some families thought because their loved one wasn't working, they were safe. But then they found out later that they went in anyway and had perished. So it was a tough time.
Of the 343 FDNYers we lost that day, how many of them have the remains been identified?
I believe it's just over half. There's still quite a number that are unaccounted for. There's some solace for some families to have, but I've always felt, you know, people go to war and they're at sea and they're lost. They're never recovered. The family has their memory is what they have, is the main thing, the spirit of that person, the soul. The remains aren't the person anymore. The person is the essence of who they are.
I have to ask you, with so many FDNYers still suffering and continuing to suffer from the health effects of the toxins, the dust, how's your health? Are you okay?
You know, I have some ill effects of it, but I have to say I can't complain because I'm still standing, and I'll be 72 years old soon. I've done okay, but I think anyone that was down there has their health has been compromised by it. This past year, every 2 weeks approximately, a member of this department, a past member of the department, has died due to their work down there. And that will continue and continue and continue for many years to come.
The other story that I hear over and over and over again from the wives, is that after experiencing and living through 9/11, they tell me their husbands have never been the same because of PTSD. Has that impacted you at all?
Perhaps more so in the immediate aftermath, the year following, a year while we were working down at the site. And at this time of year, each year, as I said, I think as the anniversary gets closer and you find yourself maybe to be occasionally short-tempered or edgy, or that's when it kicks in for me, because I know the events are coming up and returning to the site on a few different occasions during that week. It brings back what happened. So I think I'm thankful again that I'm fine in that regard, and I've been able to, with great support from my family and those around me, that I'm doing fine.
Experiencing your losses, your own personal losses, your professional losses on 9/11, and now being FDNY commissioner, but having survived and seen what you saw, has that changed the way you view life?
I think you certainly realize that things can change in a moment. We kind of always knew that in the fire department. We've been at fires and emergencies where people were killed. You have that realization that what can start off as a nice, beautiful day like today is in New York, a beautiful sunny morning. 9/11, 2001 was a beautiful day, can end very, very differently for very unusual reasons. No one expected terrorists to fly two enormous planes into the Twin Towers, and yet they did. So perhaps you at least try to take life as it comes, one day at a time.
Thank you, Commissioner. Is there anything else you want to add?
Just to the families, of course, that lost loved ones, as always, you will think of them most of all on 9/11 and how they were, I always feel I was able to, see my two daughters married and see my grandchildren born, and they weren't, some of them. So our hearts go out to who was left behind, and thank them for their courage and support over the years.
Thank you, FDNY Commissioner Daniel Nigro. Frank Siller is the CEO and president of the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation, which helps the families of first responders killed in action, not just in New York, but all over the country. I spoke with Frank Siller about what he experienced on September 11th, 19 years ago.
Well, actually, I was in my kitchen waiting for my brother Stephen, who was a New York City firefighter, who gave his life on 9/11. He would just finish his night tour, and we were going to play golf with my brother George, my brother Russ, Stephen, and myself. And while he was on his way home, he heard that the tower was hit. So he turned his truck around. He called his wife. He said, "Sally, tell my brothers I'll try to catch up with them later." He went back and got his gear. Now, that's all we knew that day. At that point, that he turned around and tried to get there. We didn't know how he got there. We didn't know if he did get there. So we're in my kitchen, and we're watching on my small television set. And, the first, after the first tower was hit, and then lo and behold, we saw the second tower hit, and we knew that we were under attack. And obviously, we weren't going to go play golf. And my brother Russ went down to my sister-in-law's house, Stephen's wife's house. I stayed home. My brother George went up to his place of business, which was literally right up the block, just to get things going there. And within a short period of time, we realized how bad this was. And we all decided to come to my house. So what the problem is that what happened was that when the first tower came down, I remember turning to my mother-in-law, whose name was Nancy, and I said, "Nancy, I think I just lost my brother." Once again, not knowing that he had gotten there or how we got there, just knowing his mindset, I knew that he somehow or another figured it out and he would be there saving people's lives, because that's what firefighters, police officers do. So we started one by one, my siblings. I have three sisters and the three brothers here. We started to come to my house, and Russell, my brother Russ, came back from my sister-in-law's, and my sister Mary was working in a hospital, ended up getting over the Bayonne Bridge to the house, had to get a police escort back to my house. My sister Gina, who was living on Staten Island, came to my house. My brother George, of course, who was in my kitchen earlier that day, came back to my house. And we were sitting there, and we knew it wasn't good because, you know, Stephen, we figured we'd have a cell phone. And, you know, I kept on calling his cell phone saying, you know, ask, you know, say, "Hey, Steve, call, check in." And he wasn't doing that. So we had a phone call from a friend of ours, a firefighter, called me up and said, "Frank, it's really bad down here." I said, "Yeah, I know, you know, Rich, you know." And he goes, "No, it's really, really bad." I said, "I know." And he goes, "No, you're not listening to me. Steven's on a list of firefighters who are missing, and all firefighters, anyone that was here that is on that list, are not coming home." So, of course, my heart dropped, kind of what I felt already earlier in the day. I got off the phone. I went back and I told my siblings, you know, about the phone call. And my sister Gina let out a cry that was, I'll never forget how the pain she felt from that moment. We all literally were on our knees holding each other, and we couldn't believe it. Because Stephen was our little brother. You know, he was the youngest of seven, and he was so much younger than all of us. My brother Russ was 25 when Stephen was born, and I was the closest in age. I was 14. So he was our little gift from God. And my parents died when he was little. My father died when he was 8 and a half, and my mother died a little over a year later. So he was just like 10 years old, and he was literally orphaned. But he was blessed that he had older siblings that we took care of him, you know. He lived with my brother Russ and my sister-in-law Jackie, who did a phenomenal job and, you know, raising him, and came back to Staten Island when he was 18 and lived with me. And but that day is a day that obviously all Americans won't forget. But me, you know, for my family and me personally, it was so personal. It was just a horrific loss.
Were Stephen's remains ever recovered? Any of his remains?
No. So, you know, I think there's about 1,200 or 1,300 the people were not recovered down there, and Stephen was not recovered. You know, we believe his soul is down at Ground Zero, you know, where, you know, when those towers came down. We believe he was in the South Tower, because any firefighter want to find out where the rest of his squad was, and all his brothers who worked with him in Squad 1. Where they were found in the South Tower. And so we believe Stephen was in the South Tower.
Did you or your siblings spend any time at Ground Zero in the days after? Because so many people were there trying to find their loved ones.
I did, yes. I was there looking for my brother. I was digging for him with other firefighters. I won't tell you, I didn't find Stephen. Obviously, we didn't recover him, but I was part of recoveries, finding other people. I won't tell you how sad it was and the parts that I found, but it's embedded in my mind forever. And yes, so I was there.
At what point did you and your family decide to start the Tunnel to Towers Foundation, the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation?
Almost immediately. I remember talking to my sister-in-law saying, I think we should do something to honor what's, you know, we've obviously had found out, you know, soon after what he had done. running through the tunnel with 60 pounds of fire gear on his back to get there. And I felt like we had to do something, and she thought it would be okay to do that. And I sat with my siblings and I said, look, we'll do the work as all, you know, six siblings. We're not going to ask my sister-in-law, you know, who has five kids, you know, five young kids, you know, to have to do the work. And so we agreed that we wanted to do something to honor Stephen and all those who perished that day, not just Stephen, because Stephen's symbolic of so much heroism that was done on 9/11. And so by December, we were already incorporated and running. So it was less than 3 months, but we were doing the thought work in the process before that.
And your first event was?
Our first event was the run. The first on September 29th, 2002. We always did it the last Sunday in September. So it was September 29th, 2002. So it was right after the first anniversary of 9/11. And, you know, we had about 2,500 people that retraced, you know, Stephen's final heroic footsteps. And it was beautiful, just overcome with emotion, all of us, you know, all us siblings, of course, my sister-in-law and his kids that were able to do it because a lot of them were young. And my kids and all my nephews and nieces were there. So it was unbelievable. But once again, we wanted it to be a celebration of their lives. So after you go through the tunnel, after you think about what Stephen did that day and so many people, you know, giving their lives that day, we come and we have a street fair afterwards, and we have a celebration of their life. We have music and people together and telling stories, and we wanted it that way because all these guys didn't want us to wallow in their loss. And I won't say self-pity, because we had the right to be upset, and come on, what a loss. But I know, as far as my brother is concerned, he doesn't want us, and he didn't want us to be sad the rest of our lives. So I personally made a conscious decision that that's the avenue that we would take. And all of us, all my siblings felt that we want to be something. Let's turn this horrific event and try to do some good with the sacrifice that Stephen made and so many people. And that's what we've been doing for the last 19 years.
And how much has Tunnel to Towers Foundation raised to help the families of first responders?
Well, we're so proud of this number. It'll be over $250 million that we have raised. We have built over 100 smart homes for our country's most catastrophically injured service members, because we know that they went to war because of what happened on 9/11. And these guys are surviving on the battlefield because of modern medicine. And they're coming back with these injuries, horrific injuries, that they might not have survived in other wars. Certainly, there was the first, there's five quadruple amputees. They would have never survived any war, but they did. And so we saw a tremendous need to build these smart homes that give them back their independence. So we built over 100 of them. And with Gold Star families, hundreds of mortgages or houses we built for them. And, of course, for our first responders, police officers and firefighters who die in the line of duty, who leave young kids behind. That is one of the most important things to us, to make sure we help these families that sacrifice so much when they lose their loved ones. And we've paid off and done so many mortgages. So we're proud of the work that we're doing.
And we're talking all over the country, not just the New York City area. And I want those of you listening to understand that when we're talking about paying off these mortgages, it's not years later. It's not months later. It's not even weeks later. It's days later. I have never seen an organization like the Stephen Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Thank you, Frank Siller, for all you do. And thank you all for joining us this morning on iHeart Communities. I'm Shelley Sunstein.